I'll call this meeting order. And it feels good to be sitting here instead of sitting in a bed at home. It was not a fun experience. But seeing your smiling faces makes me feel better all over. So with that, you want to approve the minutes? Who read the minutes?
Mr. Chair, I've read the minutes. Move their approval.
Very good. Dave, Mr. Hancock, approve the minutes of January 15th, I believe. All in favor of approving the minutes, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Minutes are approved. And with that, we will talk, have an overview of the Department of Employment and Economic Development. Kevin McKenna, who is the Deputy Commissioner, it's good to have you before this committee again. And I can't think of a more competent person to be sitting there answering all of our questions.
Well, thank you very much.
You're free to start.
Mr. Chair, as the chair mentioned, I am Kevin McKinnon. I'm the Deputy Commissioner for Economic Development at the Department of Employment and Economic Development. We are thankful to be here today to present to you a little overview of our department. Our Commissioner, Katie Clark-Sieben, sends her regrets that she isn't able to be here today. Some of you may have heard by now she is on doctor's order bed rest. She's expecting twins, but is telecommuting and also available by email or phone if any of you should have any questions. As you know, DEEDS, the state of Minnesota's principal economic development agency. Our mission is to enhance the economic success of individuals, businesses, and communities. Our budget is about $800 million, $500 of which comes from the federal government, about $200 of which is general fund, and the other $100 million is from other sources. We have over 1,500 staff statewide supporting our workforce development, economic development, research and analysis programs, all working together to make Minnesota more economically competitive. We've handed out summaries of the work that we've done in each of your legislative districts. We are actually currently updating those for 2014, so the information that you have in front of you is from 2013. We'll get you the new versions as soon as they are ready. DEED is organized into three primary groups, workforce development, economic development, and operations. We also oversee the Public Facilities Authority and explore Minnesota tourism. Within our operations division, I'd like to talk a little bit about one of the more visible units. DEED is home to the Minnesota State Labor Market Information Office, which is funded by the Federal Bureau of Labor Statistics. They provide expert analysis of labor market conditions and trends, economic impact, and program performance that serve businesses, job seekers, and communities across the state. Our LMI team produces a number of data tools that help drive our work to ensure businesses have the workers that they need and Minnesotans have opportunities for quality employment. We found that over the years, this data has been extremely valuable both for members of the legislature and your constituents. Some of the economic trends that we study are quarterly statistics on employment and wages by area and industry, job vacancy estimates, demographics of unemployment insurance claimants, occupations in demand, business employment dynamics, and others. The data on our economy shows that it is strong yet and growing stronger. At 3.7% unemployment, it's the lowest that it's been since 2001, and much lower than the national unemployment rate of 5.8%. We attained pre-recessionary levels of employment in 2014. We also saw unemployment benefit claims drop to the lowest level since before the recession last year. We've added 50,000 jobs in the last year alone and over 230,000 seasonally adjusted jobs since the end of the recession in September of 2009. This success today and in the past is not by accident. I think the question before us today is how do we keep the momentum in an environment where the only constant is change? how do we compete and win in the 21st century global economy? And what has helped us thrive in the past is what will continue to grow our success in the future, along with conscious investments in talent, innovation, and trade. Economic development. This division, its charge is to make sure that Minnesota is always a place that business can thrive and grow, and we are seeing the fruits of that labor every day as we help existing businesses expand and add new jobs and welcome new businesses to the state. Our business assistance units provide tools for starting a business, managing a business, financing a business, expanding or relocating a business to Minnesota. Our trade office is focused on an important piece of creating a healthy economy, and that is strong exports and foreign direct investment. Our community assistance programs, including broadband development, provide important tools to build strong communities where businesses can grow and thrive. Almost everything that we do is in partnership with city and county governments, public-private partnerships, and other community-based organizations. We could not do
Deputy
our work
Commissioner,
without...
Deputy Commissioner, why don't I give your voice a break? We have Representative Miller has a question to ask.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. McKinnon, on that unemployment number, that's an outstanding number, so I appreciate you sharing that with me. Can you differentiate for me the number of people that are on those unemployment ranks that are finding jobs versus people that have just given up altogether? I think they're called discouraged workers. How do those numbers break down?
Deputy Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, I actually have staff here that might be able to answer that question. I don't think I can answer that question accurately. I'm not sure if someone is here to maybe address that. Could we come back to you with that?
Yes, if you could at some point please highlight the programs that you have for the long-term unemployed also as well as bring them. Thank you.
Sounds like a good thing to bring back to the whole committee.
Thank you.
Thank you. With that, we want to continue.
Thank you.
Never mind. We got Representative Green has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you have numbers? You know, you say that there's 232,000 jobs created since the end of the recession. Do you have numbers of how many of those jobs have been sustained?
Deputy Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, members, I do not have those numbers currently. I know, obviously, we look at the number of people that are in the labor force compared to what it was several years ago, and that's the number that is used there.
I'm sure you get back to us with that number,
certainly
too. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this is not a question for the testifier, but for Representative Green. Could you define sustained? I mean, are we talking 3 months or one quarter, 8 quarters, 10 quarters? Because the recession was over, I don't know when it was declared over, but we really have come out of what I would call come out of the recession just in the last year, and to call a job sustained after a year, I'm more old school. I like that 30-year job with pension and health care and all that other stuff. Paying living wages.
I think we're really talking about a discussion between the U3 method of determining unemployment and the U6. And I remember a former majority leader is the one that came up with determining and having report to the chairman the U6 method every month, I think.
Or yeah, I think that was vetoed once.
Yeah, at least once. But anyway. Other than that, I think if we can get that information to the members, it would be very helpful. With that, you want to continue? We don't have any. Okay. Go ahead, Cap.
Thank you. I just wanted to mention that almost everything that we do is in partnership with city and county governments, public-private partnerships, and other community-based organizations. We could not do our work without them. And they also rely upon these state programs to make their deals and community projects happen as well. Our business community development division.
Just out of curiosity, is this what a pipe fitter does? Picture?
Which page, sir?
Page.
We do everything anyhow.
Look at there.
Yeah.
You got a little bit of that.
Okay.
Our Business Community Development Division operates a number of programs and provides financial and technical services to businesses, communities, and economic development professionals to support the creation, expansion, attraction, and retention of businesses in and to Minnesota. Our business community development programs have long partnered with Greater Minnesota communities to spur economic growth in Greater Minnesota. This collaboration has benefited from deed programs that are either targeted to the region or have a higher share of overall expenditures occurring outside of the Twin Cities area. Our business development specialists are located in key regions throughout the state. We have six of them. Five of them are stationed in Greater Minnesota. One is stationed here in the Twin Cities. They work closely with companies, local governments, and other development organizations of all types to help businesses locate, expand in communities throughout Minnesota. A lot of work actually goes into facilitating those expansions, which I hope all of you understand, and bringing new businesses into Minnesota. This team helps steer that work from beginning to end. As the world continues to shrink and our economy becomes more globalized, the competition for attracting fast-growing companies and stable investments is fierce. Businesses have a variety of worldwide locations to consider for expansions, and particularly when site location attributes and assets are similar, it takes a competitive financial package to make job creation opportunities a reality. Our business finance office runs loan and grant programs that help companies and communities retain existing jobs and create new ones. Even with the investments made in 2013, Minnesota's programs remain modest compared to those offered by other states. The resources that we do, however, do give us a seat at the table and an opportunity to highlight our excellent workforce, quality of life, and all the other advantages of being in Minnesota. Not all businesses are eligible for deed programs. Qualifying businesses must meet specific job creation and wage goals. Some programs are more general in nature. Some are focused on targeted industries that show job growth potential, and some are only available to Greater Minnesota. Some of these business finance programs are well known, such as the Minnesota Investment Fund and the Job Creation Fund, our two primary programs to attract and retain high-quality jobs statewide. These programs are generally focused on businesses that are selling products or service outside of our borders and bringing new money in. The Minnesota Investment Fund dollars are dispersed to local governments, which then provide loans to businesses. This program provides a cap of up to $1 million in loans per project to support capital investment and job creation. Deed generally conserves resources by limiting these awards to $500,000, and historically most projects have received significantly less than that. Industrial, manufacturing, technology-related type businesses are eligible. Some examples are Edmonton Trailer, expanding in Sartell, Northern Process Piping in Mora, Ice Castle Fish Houses in Cass County, Olympus Medical in Brooklyn Park, and Shutterfly in Shakopee. The Minnesota Job Creation Fund is a pay-for-performance program that was released in January 1st of this year, available for companies who are considering Minnesota to receive financial incentives if, and only if, they create at least 10 full-time new jobs and at certain compensation levels and have invested at least $500,000 in real property improvements.
Assistant Commissioner, I think we have another question from Mr. Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. McKinnon, from Deed's perspective, what would you say are the three key challenges to business expansion of existing businesses in Minnesota, and what would they be for businesses moving here?
Business expansion.
Mr. McKinnon.
Mr. Chair, members, the challenges that we see quite often are really dependent on the project and the type of obviously industry and the location of which they're going to. Many times there'll be issues with there could be transportation issues that have to be solved. There could be community issues such as lack of water, sewer, those types of things. In some cases, we're seeing financing issues. As of late, we're not seeing as many financing issues. It's not as prevalent as it once was. So access to capital is improving, but it still is always up there when we're talking about expansions in Minnesota. I would also say likely transportation comes up relatively frequently, and then of course workforce.
One follow-up question, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Mr. McKinnon, one of the concerns in my region, and I understand there's lots of reasons, but one of the things that we're running into is some permitting issues, some other regulations. Have you found that at all? Have you seen that at all indeed, if that's indeed one of the challenges that you're facing?
Assistant Deputy Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, members, we've had an initiative for many years at the state, which brings together several different agencies. Today it's called the Minnesota Business First Stop, that discusses projects, that works collaboratively with businesses and a variety of agencies to hopefully smoothly get those processes done, but more importantly explain the process and go with them along the way of application. From our perspective, yes, there has been a variety of needs around permitting that a lot of our expansions have had, primarily around the air permitting areas for manufacturers who are doing paint booths and those types of things that have been solved and expansions have happened. So I think the sooner that we get in and the sooner that we start talking about those issues with projects, the better off that they have the better result that happens from that.
Thank you.
Representative Moran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and welcome back.
Thank you.
Hope you're feeling better.
I am.
Good. I want to take us back a little bit to looking at the labor market information that you provided. And, you know, you talked about 3.7 unemployment and the number of jobs that has been created. Some would say that we have recovered from a recession, you know, but I know in many communities, including communities of color, you know, we haven't seen that growth. And so are you able to provide for us what the unemployment rate is for communities of color and what that looks like for job creations in communities of color?
Deputy Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, members. We do track, I believe it's called the Alternative Unemployment Statistics on our website that does display communities of color. Alternative Statistics on Unemployment. It's a section on our website, and we can certainly give you that information that does detail the unemployment rates for various groups. It's relatively new that we've started doing that, maybe a year ago or so.
Representative Moran.
Mr. Chair, that would be nice. But why is it called Alternative Statistics? Why is it called Alternative Statistics?
Mr. Chair, members, I believe it's because it's not the numbers aren't as easily put together in Minnesota because of how they collect the data mm-hmm. at the federal level. So there is another way to do it, and that's what that mm-hmm. I believe that's what it means. But we can certainly also clarify that okay. for you,
Representative Moran.
And Mr. Chair, so in regards to the economic development piece that you spoke about for Business and Community Development Division, business development and business finance, you talked a little bit about that and how you support that. But you also, and we can talk about, you know, what that looks like also for the low-income community and communities of color, what that, you know, in that type of support that is coming from DEED or not. But you also stated that there was only finances available for only greater Minnesota. What do that look like? Could you kind of like restate that and what that looks like?
Deputy Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, members, we have about 26 programs in our Business Community Development Division at DEED. Not all are funded every year. We have some programs that are targeted directly at greater Minnesota. We have some programs that are targeted directly at low-income areas. I'm not going to go through all of them today, but would be happy to do that at another time, most definitely. With certainly some of the programs that are more available in some of the targeted regions. a couple of years ago, we had a program that was created. It's called the Greater Minnesota Sales Tax Exemption Program. That is only available outside of the 7 or 11 county area here of the metro. A lot of it's done, it's obviously done in the law. And some of our programs, like our redevelopment program, if we have qualified applications, 50% of those monies have to go to Greater Minnesota by law. So we have a lot of that in some of our statutes.
There are programs, I think, of MEDA and Women Venture, and many of them that are metro-only programs for minority populations. And I've always supported them 100%, and I will continue to do that. But there also, for the first time, was one that was for entrepreneurship for minorities in Greater Minnesota. For the first time, we had a program that was earmarked just for them. So there is give and take between the metro and Greater Minnesota. One of the biggest things is the Job Z program was just for Greater Minnesota. We did correct that with the governor's job creation program, which is just as good in the metro area as it is in Greater Minnesota. There is a few things that will always be, and I hope will someday, I shouldn't say always, I hope someday. Mm. The average family income in the metro area far exceeds the average family income in Greater Minnesota. But also the average cost of living changes about the same amount. We're close.
Mr. Chair, can you make sure that we get that information also, what that looks like? Yeah. Thank you.
Hey, Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hate to interrupt this discussion, and I do want the presentation to continue, but I think what you're hearing here is something, a frustration that you're probably hear throughout the year, and it's going to be difficult because this committee has the Greater Minnesota. Our focus is only on Greater Minnesota in this committee, and yet I think some of the members, particularly those from the Twin Cities, are feeling like this may be their only opportunity to talk about the issues as they affect their area, which in this instance is the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. So, Mr. Chair, you and I will talk, and we haven't had a chance yet, but perhaps we can iron out a little bit of this because we don't want to disrupt the flow of the committee, but we also want to make sure that those issues are addressed and are going to be this year addressed either in another committee or if we could hear from you, how that might happen. We're not clear yet, and part of that's just because you and I haven't had a chance to talk, and we'll do that here in the next week. But you're hearing a frustration that I think you'll probably continue to hear.
I think we had that a little bit last session when Chairman Mahoney with Representative Mulry, he was thinking that Greater Minnesota was getting a few things that he wasn't getting. I had to remind him of all the programs I helped him get passed, as well as St. Paul, and to say that I am a Greater Minnesota legislator exclusively is totally wrong. I can give you instance after instance after instance in Representative Mahoney's close to his district. You had a national award-winning Phelan corridor that I authored 4 years in a row, and I think this connotation of Greater Minnesota is the first time Greater Minnesota ever had something by itself. So we had a lot of metro things, including the Met Council and everything else, port authorities and everything else to help get along, but we have never had anything strict, especially supposed to be for Greater Minnesota. And I hope that thing, as you've mentioned, gets dispelled very quickly because I assure you, I, nor probably anybody here, wants to make anything harmful happen to the metro.
So, Mr. Chair, can I respond? I'm not frustrated, but I do believe in information and sharing information as we're doing around the table. And I think that is just good information for me to know because, I believe you when you say that you're not just a rural legislator, that you are a statewide legislator. And I think my point is that, there are communities that are, as the rural community, that feel left out and not part of the process, and there isn't a job growth among certain communities. And I believe it is that we all want to see individuals have the opportunity to be prosperous. And in order to do that, we really do need a job, right? And so, yeah, I just want to gather information.
And I totally agree with one thing, that there are places in the metro area that are every bit as depressed as they are in greater Minnesota.
Absolutely.
And I think Brainerd or Baxter or somewhere up there has the highest unemployment rate of any place in the state. So with that, hopefully pass this a little bit. I don't think it'll ever completely be past this, but we'll listen to the wisdom of Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have a number of questions, but hopefully people will see where I'm going with that with the Deputy Commissioner. But for those that would like information on labor statistics, unemployment in any particular county, actually, I think they, at Deed in their labor statistics, they have it down to the census tract, pretty close. And they have it broken out by six different levels, whether it's long-term, short-term, overall, urban versus rural. You can call up the UI people. The director has been in Deed for a very long time and is very good. And if you have concerns about a number of other issues, whether they're economic development or job training, those people have all those statistics and they can give them to you, and they're happy to sit down in your office and explain them to you in ad nauseum, well beyond that. But my question for Deputy Commissioner McKinnon, and it goes to my irritableness over the comment about urban versus rural, and how greater Minnesota has gotten the short end of the stick on a regular basis. And I'm going to ask the question, but I'm going to set it up here. In his presentation, he named, I think it was six places where the state invested in one fashion or another. Four of them were in what would be called greater Minnesota. Two of them were in suburban Minnesota, and none of them were in the urban core those particular areas. So my question to the Deputy Commissioner is, do you or does the department track a percentage of the dollars that particularly that were invested in the last budgetary system cycle, but on the whole, what percentage of our economic development dollars goes to the non-five county metro area, or even the non-two county metro area? How about the non-two county metro area? Because we get blame for everything, Ramsey and Hennepin, versus what is in the Hennepin and Ramsey County. My guess is we're well over 70% going to greater Minnesota outside the 11 county metro area, and 30% going to the cities. So if you could answer that in more detail, I'd appreciate it.
Mr. Chair, members, we do not, I don't have the information with me today as to the amount of money that goes into one region or another. I can tell you, and will further on here in the presentation, that we have separated it between the 11 county metro and greater Minnesota, and we have some great numbers that I will talk about from that perspective. From the perspective of the two counties or the seven counties, yes, we could certainly get you that information. We have been very transparent with obviously a lot of our awards and where the monies are going, and you can see a lot of that in our website, but we will prepare something and we can get that to you.
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, Deputy Commissioner, if you could pass that along to the CA, and I'll ask the CA to pass it along to all the members, because I did get the answers to the state of rural Minnesota answers, and I appreciated that, and I think all the members read every one of their emails that they get.
All right.
One thing you always got to remember, Representative Mahoney reads everything.
So continuing on with the Minnesota Job Creation Fund, This is a program that businesses create 10 full-time positions at certain compensation levels and invest $500,000 in real property improvements. There are two types of incentives that are available: job creation awards and capital investment rebates. Generally, up to $1 million is available, which is our cap, and it's based upon the number of jobs that are created and the private investment numbers. In creating the Job Creation Fund, the legislature and the governor included specific provisions in this program to work a little bit differently in Greater Minnesota. There's a lower lower capital investment rebate that's available in the Twin Cities at 5% versus 7.5% in Greater Minnesota, and the terms are longer in Greater Minnesota. We are able to go 5 years in the metro and up to 7 years in Greater Minnesota. Some of our Job Creation Fund projects around the state: Iconics in Duluth, Team Industries in Detroit Lakes, North Star Mutual in Cottonwood, Bayport or Anderson in Bayport, Anderson Windows Super Radiator Coils in Chaska, and many others across the state. We've done 27 awards to date. Other tax-related programs that we have a role in administering include the Greater Minnesota Job Expansion Program, which I talked about earlier, which are sales tax exemptions available to businesses that are expanding and adding jobs in Greater Minnesota, along with Border City Enterprise Zones. Another tool that we have to help businesses expand is our Minnesota Job Skills Partnership Program. This program works strategically with businesses and educational institutions to train or retrain workers, expand work opportunities, and keep high-quality jobs in the state. MJSP grants are used to offset training-related expenses incurred by businesses as they develop curriculum that the industries need to meet current and future workforce needs. Of the 250 or so awards from 2010 to 2015 that the Job Skills Partnership made, 123 have been in Greater Minnesota compared to 126 in the 7-county metro. Well, you also hear a lot of work about what DEED does to promote major business relocations, expansions, those types of things. We also have a Small Business Assistance Office that provides individual consultation services along with comprehensive series of business guidebooks. We also provide small business services through the Small Business Development Center Network with 9 offices across the state in partnership with higher education institutions that provide the advice and consulting small companies need to flourish. The Small Business Development Centers are great resources in your communities. In addition to the 9 base offices, we have 26 satellite offices that are located across the state as well. They are connected to our statewide network, but are also connected to local businesses and certainly local lending institutions. So by the numbers, in state fiscal year 14, from the Minnesota Investment Fund, $14.1 million has been made in loans. For the current biennium, that's leveraged over $400 million in private investment and helped to create nearly 2,000 jobs. Of the 41 projects to date, 22 projects are in Greater Minnesota, while 19 are in the Twin Cities. The Job Creation Fund, $13.5 million in awards have gone out for the current biennium and have helped spur a projected $250 million in project spending and creating over 1,300 new jobs. Of those 27 projects, 14 are in Greater Minnesota, 13 are in the Twin Cities. I should also note that those monies are still within the state. Those monies are not released until businesses meet certain goals, and at which time they become eligible for those rebates. We've accomplished these impressive results with very modest staff, responsible for 27 federal and state programs, and providing assistance to businesses and communities statewide. We also know that to attract and keep businesses, jobs, and people, communities need many things: sound housing, ample commercial and industrial property, healthy drinking water, wastewater treatment, solid infrastructure, and so on. To make these more affordable, we provide financial assistance to communities statewide for projects that help them stay vital and better position them for new economic growth. Our community assistance programs include the redevelopment grant program, which helps communities with the cost of redeveloping blighted industrial, residential, or commercial sites and putting that land back into productive use. And the contamination cleanup program, which helps pay for assessing and cleaning contaminated sites for private or public redevelopment. We also operate several infrastructure programs, one of which is the Greater Minnesota Business Development Public Infrastructure Program, is only available in Greater Minnesota. These programs provide infrastructure support such as water, sewer, that communities specifically need to support economic development projects. We're also responsible for managing a large number of public projects passed by the legislature and governor, 32 just in last session. More recently, DEED has begun to focus on the critical role of broadband access and what it plays to economic development. We know this is particularly essential for the economic competitiveness of Greater Minnesota. Minnesota policymakers set a number of critical broadband goals in 2010. Chief among them, the state of Minnesota committed to achieving border-to-border access to moderate levels of broadband service to every home in the state by 2015. And number two, achieving a top ranking among states in the adoption and use of broadband technologies. At present, 75...
Commissioner, I think we have a question. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Deputy Commissioner McKinnon, underneath the broadband heading, there's been talk about trying to allow for municipal broadband systems rather than the half a dozen statewide organizations that provide broadband. With this $20 million that was done last year, and I think there's multiple millions more to come, will your agency be looking at trying to help some of these smaller communities develop their own broadband, or kind of like you, the energy stuff with a little muni?
Mr. Chair, members, the broadband program basically is designed to work with providers and certainly others who are interested in creating that type of service available wherever those projects are. From a local perspective, we have a variety of different partners, whether they're private partners, whether they're local partners, and others to make that service available. So I think the answer to that question would be yes, we'd be willing to partner with just about anybody that's willing to put that that service in at the service levels that are demanded. At present, 75% of Minnesota households have access to broadband at or above state speed goals. Over 300,000 households still need such service. The Office of Broadband Development that was created at DEED serves as a focal point for Minnesota's efforts to achieve a leadership position in the availability, speed, and use of broadband to ensure that our citizens and communities are able to fully participate in today's digital society and have increased access to economic, health, education, and social opportunities statewide. Estimates suggest the total cost of achieving broadband goals is somewhere between $900 million and $3.2 billion. But the state of Minnesota is only one of several contributors towards closing that gap. There are private providers, along with the federal government, that continue to build infrastructure into unserved areas where they can achieve strong returns on investment. Infrastructure funding allows DEED to address the needs left unmet by the private sector in areas that are not otherwise on providers' investment horizon. By the numbers, in addition to the fund information above, we managed about $180 million in bonding and public infrastructure programs from last year. About $115 million of that of the capital investment bill last year went to Greater Minnesota, the remainder that was in the Twin Cities area. We also expect to serve just under 7,000 households in Greater Minnesota with the state fiscal year 15 appropriation for the border-to-border broadband infrastructure program, and that was the $20 million that I believe Representative Mahoney was referring to. Also within economic development exists our trade office. The trade office is meant to promote economic prosperity by increasing the state's exports and foreign direct investment. Exports of manufactured goods, services, and agricultural commodities continue to foreign countries are an extremely important part of our economy, accounting for $33 billion in revenue annually and tens of thousands of jobs statewide. Exported goods are more valuable, take higher skills to make, which brings more money back into our state. Through training and expertise that small and mid-sized companies need to export goods and services successfully worldwide, the Minnesota Trade Office helps Minnesota companies turn opportunities into profits in foreign markets across the globe. Our trade reps guide companies through the challenges of conducting international business, from basic guidance for companies new to exporting to technical, regulatory, and logistical information for more experienced companies, to market intelligence and research, to the art of conducting business across borders and cultures. Our trade reps have answers for most of your pressing questions. We also provide direct assistance to Minnesota manufacturers and service providers, focusing primarily on assisting small and medium-sized companies. Several programs include grants and loan guarantees that are available from a variety of sources that help exporters make their first foreign sales or help current exporters enter into new markets. The State STEP program is our largest program in this area, which provides financial and technical assistance for qualifying small companies with an active interest in exporting products or services to foreign markets. Participants may be first-time exporters or companies that are looking to enter new markets. Finally, we maintain four offices and staff in key international markets, including Brazil, China, Germany, and South Korea. This helps foreign companies explore investments in Minnesota, but also helps our companies access those markets as well. We also have a variety of different trade connections through our Department of Agriculture that we work very closely with. By the numbers, over 1,000 organizations received export assistance in fiscal year 13, and nearly 1,200 people attended the training seminars that we put on a regular basis. That concludes the economic development portion of this. I will move to the workforce part of our agency, unless there's any other questions.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Deputy Commissioner. Before we move on, I'd like to ask you if you could give me some information. I won't ask you to answer these right now, but I would like, if you have it, the statistics on the percentages of what businesses you help as opposed to existing businesses versus new businesses, and also what is the longevity of the new businesses? You mean if you keep those statistics, how long are they staying in business? And do you have any, I know that I talked about this years ago with Commissioner McElroy when he was in there, but and he never did get me the answer to this, and that is what safeguards there are that you have when you help a new business from that new business being in competition with a business that's already there. So along with the, and also back to Representative Mahoney's point about the longevity of the job, and that was a better way to phrase that as, you know, what is there any numbers that you can get me as to how long a job lasts rather than just the generic statistics. So are these people being employed for 5 years, 30 years? So thank you.
Deputy Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, members, we can certainly put that information together. I can tell you that about 90% of what we do and about 90% of where our program monies go are for existing businesses. We don't do as much externally, maybe as you may hear about those sometimes, but primarily the work that we do is with our existing businesses. We can certainly try and get some of that information on longevity and certainly the safeguards for non-competes. That's something that we're very familiar with as well.
Any questions?
Yeah, I got a question, Mr. Chair.
I'd be disappointed if you didn't.
Well, actually, it's not really a question. It's just to Representative Green's point. Funds a lot of nonprofits that works with businesses. Enterprise Minnesota, the Neighborhood Development Corporations, and their iterations out in greater Minnesota. So it would be unfair to just ask for what Deed does without including all of them and the Job Skills Partnership. So I don't know, Representative Green, you probably want to have that conversation to find out how broad it is, but I think you you should ask, going across all the programs that they fund versus just what they themselves do, because Enterprise Minnesota works with 1,200 companies a year. I think it, no, it's not quite 1,200 a year, but it quite a few a year, and over the last 4-6 years, they could only work, was it 8 years ago, Mr. Chair, that they could only work with companies
Greater Minnesota
above 250. Last biennium, we changed that to 45 or 80 anywhere, I think it was. So there's a whole, that's a broad brush, and you better figure out what you're see, what you're looking at when he brings that, when the commissioner or their lobbyist brings that to you.
Deputy Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, members, the answer there as well, when we do have that information, is there's a variety of different programs, and the some of the programs that, let's say, are available here to low-income areas in the metro area that Representative Mahoney was discussing, those are financing programs that are available to businesses located in those districts. We tend to do a lot of restaurants and those types of things with it. We don't administer it ourselves. We pass the money on to these nonprofits who administer it. In those situations, yes, there would be a lot of competition, of course. When you talk about some of our other programs, you'll see that it's a little different in that manner. So we can break the programs out if that makes more sense.
Okay, with that, we'll get another one. Oh, Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Deputy Commissioner, if you don't mind going back to the broadband just for a minute. I know Representative Mahoney had alluded to a couple of state or community entities that sort of facilitate broadband development. What are you seeing from the private sector? Is there the will from the private sector to do some of this broadband development, or kind of how are you getting buy-in from the private sector to partner with the state for some of these things?
Deputy Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, members, with a lot of the projects that we've seen thus far, we're seeing great buy-in, obviously, from the private providers. But this is a lot like patchwork as well, putting a number of different financing sources together to get the returns that obviously the private money is looking for as well. In all cases, we're looking at private sector, I believe, in most of them that are out to date, that are in to date, we're looking at private sector investments. So it's gone as expected, I would say, is the answer to that.
Thank you.
Representative Miller.
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to comment on the broadband. I've been asking around in our communities, and I'd like us to discuss at some point, when appropriate, in this committee. And I'm not an expert on it, so I'm not here to, but my understanding is that there's just the nature of how broadband is coming in as a utility. There's some regulatory confusion, and there's some issues of who can put in broadband where and why and stuff like that. And so I think beyond maybe the money that's needed to build this infrastructure, if we can investigate at some point in time a little bit of the ways that we can kind of loosen up the hold. And if you'd like to address that Deputy Commissioner, that would be great. But I just think that that's one of the things, because when I've said, why don't we have broadband out here, I hear numerous reasons as to, well, we'd like to, but here's kind of the way the playing field is. And I don't think it's any ill-intentioned. I just think that it's one of the challenges that we have.
We have every intention of having broadband before this committee to describe exactly at the end of this month who got the 50% grant, the other 50% have to come from some entity, and who didn't and why. And I think it's a very good question. I think if there's somebody that didn't get any that should have, we want to ask that question too. So I think if we just wait for a while, we'll get that done.
That's fine.
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to add to that. I mean, I think it's worth remembering we, in my opinion, grossly underfunded broadband because we have limited, we had limited funds to go out. The needs are great. The amount we put in, you know, it seems big when you talk about $20 million, but it's tiny when you look at the need. And so places that want it, I mean, even as strange as it sounds, just outside of Rochester, there isn't broadband in homes in some of the surrounding areas. And I can, you know, mm-hmm. we're not as rural, as deep rural as some of the rest of the folks in the state, but I'm sure we're not on a list anywhere near ready to get those funds because they were so limited. So I really look forward to that large discussion on this very important issue.
We'll ask that question, too, when they come before us. How many people wanted to have something happen that didn't happen, and why? I think it's important that we have these things done. I think it's no doubt about it. Broadband is a huge economic development tool for the whole state of Minnesota. You have any other questions?
Just, yeah, Mr. Chair, if I could, I don't want to misrepresent. This isn't about money. When I've gone to private companies and said, you know, like a phone company, and saying, what will it take for you to expand as a private business, expand what services you provide? No, I'm not hearing money. No. I'm hearing that it's just a definition of who can put broadband in where. Like I said, the regulatory, I don't want to get into it deep here. I just think that it's something that needs to be discussed because there are limits. So to give example, in my town, I have one company who serves internet. I have Dish Network as a satellite service. I can't get their satellite internet because of the way that the rules work, so I don't have the choice of that, and I just want to be able to discuss at some point some of the confusion and some of the things that do, because the one company that I talked with out in our region that wants to expand, it was not an issue of money.
Okay. Well, we'll look forward to having the discussion before the committee. And I do applaud Chairman Mahoney for at least coming up with $20 million because the Senate came up with nothing. So with that, Deputy Commissioner, what's next?
Thank you. Workforce development. Workforce development is a key component of keeping Minnesota economically competitive. We know this is a particular concern to you and your communities as it is to us. If you have questions, I do have staff here today that can help address some of those, as well as I'm not necessarily the workforce side expert. We have a number of programs that connect employers to workers of all skills and backgrounds, including adults from communities of color, youth, people with disabilities. We operate a number of services, many connected to our statewide network of workforce centers, that provide resources to all Minnesotans in need of assistance in moving forward in their careers. These services are critical to help people achieve and to support themselves and their families. Before diving into these programs, I think it's important to take a look at our labor force as a whole. When companies outside of Minnesota or here are looking to expand or relocate, we're often on the short list because of what every company wants, and that's a qualified workforce to get the job done. As I said, we've added over 200,000 jobs in the last 5 years. We've ranked third in the nation in labor force participation rate, fourth in the nation for population with a high school degree, 11th in the nation for population with a bachelor's degree or higher. From CNBC to Forbes to the Kauffman Foundation, Minnesota is often recognized for high quality of life and its excellent workforce. That said, we face two major workforce challenges: the fact that not every Minnesotan is feeling our economic resurgence, and that our labor force is undergoing dramatic changes. As large numbers of baby boomers retire, an estimated 215,000 individuals will leave the Minnesota labor force. As you can see by this chart, by the 2020s, we anticipate that the labor force growth rate will be at record low levels as these aging trends continue. The looming labor shortage presents the greatest challenge to Minnesota's continued economic growth, which will have adverse effects on both the economic security of Minnesota's workers and the ability of Minnesota businesses to thrive. Simply put, we need all Minnesotans who want to work participating in the labor force in order to meet the demands of our growing economy. In order to meet the needs of our economy, we need to maximize every Minnesotan with the right skills required by growing businesses. Before I go through our workforce programs in more detail, I wanted to highlight our recently launched web-based tool for performance measures. To help Minnesotans see what they get for their tax dollars invested, DEED measures the performance of all the programs it funds or provides. Representative Mahoney had worked to ensure that these measurements are accessible to policymakers and the public. Our effort on this web-based data tool was instigated by him and funded in last year's budget. This data tool compares activities and employment outcomes for select workforce development programs by education level, race, ethnicity, gender, and geography, and it is accessible on our website. The first division I'll talk about is our unemployment insurance division. This is one of the most critical tools in keeping our workforce strong. The UI program enhances the economic strength of Minnesota by providing unemployment insurance for individuals and employers, provides stability to local economies by helping to maintain spending during economic downturns, supports dislocated workers while they are obtaining training so they may re-enter the labor market, and ensures that skilled workers do not leave an area in search of other work during periods of short-term unemployment. Our workforce adult programs, this is another important part of what we do. These services support Minnesotans seeking new employment through local and statewide partnerships designed to develop and improve career skills and obtain employment at family-sustaining wages. Although focused on job seekers in all of our workforce development programs, DEED works closely with businesses to respond to their needs in recruiting and training their current and future workforces. It's imperative that our job seekers are being trained and prepared for jobs in demand. We serve adult populations through a variety of both state and federally funded programs. Our 48 workforce centers and significant portion of our federal funding goes towards the general customer who is seeking greater participation in the labor force. In addition to these general services, DEED helps workers who have lost their jobs through no fault of their own. We do this through the Dislocated Worker Program, which is funded with state and federal money, assists laid-off workers in returning to a job with comparable wages and benefits. Participants can get career planning and counseling, job search and placement, short-term training and support services for things like family care and transportation through this program. Educationally unprepared adults who face barriers to employment are served by two complementary programs. The state-funded Minnesota Fast Track Career Pathways Program, which provides basic skills education and career-specific training in fields where new skills are in high demand by employers. The state-funded Adult Workforce Competitive Grant Program provides individuals living with disabilities, those individuals returning to work after receiving public assistance, and racial and ethnic minorities employment and training to help increase their employment, earnings, and occupational skills. State funds have been particularly crucial in this area, and our federal funding sources have not offered us enough flexibility or financial support to serve these Minnesota-specific needs. DEED administers a federally funded program for veterans that provides job readiness assessments, preparation, and job placement services to veterans. Our veteran employment services staff are all veterans themselves, bringing firsthand knowledge and experience to the program. Of particular interest to Greater Minnesota, the 2013 legislature funded a pilot customized training program for skilled manufacturing industries. The legislation designated Alexandria Tech and Community College, Central Lakes College, Century College, and Hennepin Tech as program grantees. The customized training pilot program aimed to address critical employment needs in Minnesota by connecting private and public entities to successfully train workers in skilled manufacturing. The program experienced both successes and challenges. A recently completed evaluation is available on our website. By the numbers, our workforce development saw strong results in state fiscal year 13, as you can see, almost 230,000 job seekers served, and our Fast Track Adult Career Pathways participants saw a 47% increase in wages.
We have a question from Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You were just talking about the specialized training that was passed last year, and you've been evaluating the pros and cons, and I'm going to talk to staff and try to track some of that down. And I'm wondering, how does this overlay with some programs that sound very similar but are using, I believe, fast-track funds that the workforce development centers are doing in our communities? Of course, I represent a community that has a lot of health care, and so our region is looking for healthcare workers, and there have been some really unique, it sounds like the same description you just described for the advanced manufacturing, but it's done for healthcare using funding, I think, that's available through the Fast Track and other programs. These are different programs, but they do the same thing. I'm just looking for some clarification because I've heard about one, and now I'm hearing something that sounds very similar, but it sounds like it has a different funding source.
Deputy Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, we've got Tom Norman, our Director of Workforce Development, here that might be able to better answer that question.
Welcome to our committee. Give your name for the record, please.
Thomas Norman, Director of Workforce Development, DEET. Mr. Chairman, in response to the representative's question, we have launched a very vigorous network of programs called Career Pathways, and they're articulated as the Fast Track programs, and these are very innovative approaches to really draw in developmental education into the actual or contextualized curriculum that's designed around significant career pathways, healthcare being one of the many. That's a very, very vibrant program, and we only hope to continue and expand. Healthcare has been a particularly successful target for us in identifying ready career pathways for a number of individuals that can really use this type of assistance to launch their careers. To respond to the representative's question, there was a special pilot project that sounds quite similar around looking at how customized training programs can be done slightly differently than they have been done in the past. Mm-hmm. Three partners were involved, Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, Department of Labor and Industry, and DEET was the grant recipient, organized the program, and it was really an effort to take a look at providing more customized training around industry needs. The Fast Track for Pathways program really looks at clustering those needs around identified career pathways. Some similarity in between the two programs, however, when they were developed and deployed, there is some distinct differences.
And Mr. Chair?
Representative North.
Thank you. And perhaps we can talk offline a little bit more about this, but I think as we look at the career pathways and Fast Track model and we look at this other model, some, as you mentioned, were very successful and maybe losing some federal funding. Others maybe weren't so successful. And I look up here at the Capitol often where we try pilots and sometimes they just disappear and the funding disappears and the career pathways, the federal funding might be disappearing. But as we look at this, as well as the work we've been doing through DOLLE with the pipeline funds, which targets both advanced manufacturing and healthcare, I think there's an opportunity here to relook at this for this committee for Greater Minnesota and the Twin Cities benefit, to really look at what were the best practices, what worked well, what do we want to duplicate, and what maybe didn't work so well and we don't want to do. So I'm hoping we don't continue to have too many disconnected opportunities, and instead we look at a package that really will work as we move ahead. So perhaps we could talk later about some ideas you might have for that.
We'd be happy to have that conversation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Mahoney.
Seeing how we have the workforce person up here, I was wondering if I could ask you, do you know statewide across all agencies how many job training programs we have?
In total, we have, I can give you that information if you bear with me.
I will bear with you.
The major programs.
I'm talking all of them, from Commerce to Health and Human Services to DEET to Ag to everything. Just if you know that number.
I do not have that information with me.
Just a second. Mr. Chair, what's the last number you heard of?
129.
Oh, I heard 160.
I believe you're right.
So I have one more question. And that is, how many departments did that, was that?
It was in 12 departments of state government.
So just the question I would have is, is there a standard way of determining whether one program is successful or not successful? Is there are we able to compare apples to apples at all across those 129 or 160 programs?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney, we are. Across the board, there are comprehensive performance measures for each of the programs administered by DEET and for the multiple agencies that also deliver various workforce programming outcome information typically looks at numbers of individuals served, jobs that were acquired, the length of time that they were employed, the exit wage rate, and then the length of employment they have had over time, ethnicity of participation, and a variety of other performance standards. As Deputy Commissioner McKinnon reported earlier, and at the request of this committee in the last session, a comprehensive reporting tool was developed by DEED, and our colleague Rachel Bilsack and the Policy and Performance Management Team for DEED-sponsored programs with state resources. It's an excellent tool, and I think moves us along further around answering a question, which does represent a very complex milieu of programs targeted for the workforce.
And just one quick other question, Mr. Chair, and this is for the Deputy Commissioner. Do you know if the governor is likely to, or giving any thought to, continuing funding of the accountability of these workforce program, workforce outcomes, workforce training outcomes?
Deputy Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, members, I do not.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
You, sir.
Thank you.
Never mind. Representative Hancock's got a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it's more of a question rather than, or maybe a statement. Looking at the funds, you know, the federal funding is obviously the major player here. The general fund seems relatively small. Is there a breakdown of the other funds? It would be interesting to me if we have 160 programs that are in operation, if you could give us a breakdown of just where the money's coming from in these other funds would be helpful to me, at least, being new on the committee. More of a statement than a question, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Anybody have an answer?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hancock, that information is available, and we can certainly provide that. Just say that the number of programs operated through the Department of Employment and Economic Development is a much smaller subset of that larger number.
I remember when we first wrote a job criteria report, the MinSCU threw a little monkey wrench. They gave us their whole budget, and we had calls from New York City after they did that. So it is a very complicated thing, and I'm glad you have a tool. I can't wait to hear more about it. I think Mahoney would even come to the meeting.
Great. Our next program, the Workforce Development Youth Programs. We also provide workforce development services for youth who are often from low-income families and face barriers to employment. These are the young people at the greatest risk of suffering serious setbacks in life without extra help and guidance in their formative years. Our youth workforce programs include federally funded services that are provided through local workforce investment boards. Workforce investment boards in your communities, and a number of state-funded programs. The Youth Build Program, for example, offers a construction career pathway for at-risk youth and young adults who have dropped out of school or who experience repeated failure in school. It provides youth with industry-recognized credentials and apprenticeship training in residential construction and contextual basic skills in work readiness and leadership. The state-funded Youth at Work program, previously known as the Youth Workforce Competitive Grant Program, provides workforce development and training to economically disadvantaged or at-risk youth, with special consideration to youth from communities of color and youth with disabilities. Finally, the state-funded Minnesota Youth Program provides summer and year-round employment and training services to economically disadvantaged and at-risk youth statewide. The MIP allows youth to apply classroom skills and abilities to real work settings while earning a paycheck. Some youth program numbers. As you can see, 9,400 youth served by the Workforce Development Grant Program in fiscal year 13, about 3,900 that were served under federal programs in partnership with local WIBs and youth councils. Our Vocational Rehabilitation Division. This part of our workforce development provides services for people with disabilities. Our vocational rehab program supports Minnesotans whose disabilities cause serious functional limitations in life achieve their employment goals. More than 300 vocational rehabilitation counselors work within the Minnesota Workforce Center system to deliver services that include vocational evaluation, training, counseling, assistive technology, and job placement. This program is funded jointly by the federal government and by the state. Some customers may also receive post-employment assistance. Our state-funded extended employment program provides ongoing employment support services to Minnesotans with significant disabilities to maintain and advance in their employment. We also provide specialized support to people with serious mental illness. Our state-funded individual placement and support program provides long-term job support, provides individuals with help in finding work, training, or retraining on job tasks, and managing changes in non-work environments that might impact their work performance. Our independent living program helps Minnesotans with disabilities to live with greater independence. Services include advocacy, independent living skills, training, peer counseling, support groups, information and referral, transportation assistance, home and work modification counseling, and many other services. By the numbers, 2,900 customers in the Voc Rehab program attained employment. About almost 5,000 customers in the extended employment program earned almost $28 million in wages. And others that are on here are very impressive for this part of our agency. State services for the blind division. We also help Minnesotans who have vision loss or other disabilities such as learning disabilities or dyslexia that make it difficult to read print. As we see a dramatic shift in Minnesota's aging demographics in the coming decades, we anticipate that the need for these services will more than quadruple in the future. Our SSB services are comprehensive and designed to help individuals achieve personal and vocational independence. They include workforce development, business enterprises, senior services, and the communication center. By the numbers, 1,000 people received workforce development services, and those who found jobs earned an hourly wage of almost $15.50 an hour. News services were accessed over 450,000 separate times through our program. Minnesota's Olmstead Plan. As many of you know, a 1999 U.S. Supreme Court decision, Olmstead versus LC, found that the Americans with Disabilities Act requires states to provide services to people with disabilities in the most integrated settings appropriate to their needs. The court came to this conclusion for two reasons. Number one, the segregation of individuals with disabilities perpetuates the notion that some individuals are incapable or unworthy of participating in community life, and that such segregation severely diminishes a person's life, family relations, social contacts, work options, economic independence, educational advancement, and cultural enrichment. In 2011, Minnesota DHS entered into a settlement agreement that required the development of a Minnesota-specific Olmstead Plan. The goals of this plan include, for example, commitments to individuals who are unnecessarily segregated in facilities, for individuals with development disabilities, pediatric hospitals, and nursing homes. DEET is especially involved with implementing the Olmstead requirements related to employment opportunities for people with disabilities. Both DEET's vocational rehab services and our state services for the blind are making several changes to their programs to give customers more opportunities to receive services in the most integrated setting possible. Ultimately, we are committed to ensuring that Minnesotans with disabilities have the opportunity to be close to families and friends, to live independently, to engage in productive employment, and to fully participate in community life. So from a workforce development service continuum perspective, the purpose of this chart is basically to help show you that we are not alone in our workforce development work. Much like our economic development side, we have a variety of partners that we must deal with. the Minnesota Department of Education, the Office of Higher Education, the Department of Labor and Industry, Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, the University of Minnesota, and MinSCU are all key partners in creating strategies to strengthen Minnesota's workforce to ensure our continued economic prosperity. These services our agencies offer complement each other to ensure that we have the world's best workforce to keep our economy growing strong. And finally, as you can see, our programs promote talent, innovation, and trade, are diverse, and they're tailored to meet a variety of economic needs. While our economy has made major strides in recent years, we stand ready to meet the challenges ahead. DEED programs will continue to grow a strong and diverse workforce in advance of our looming labor shortage, while helping those who are unemployed get back to work. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for taking the time to discuss DEED today. We look forward to working with you more over the coming months to promote economic prosperity for Minnesota's workers and businesses, and of course, happy to answer any further questions if there are any.
Seeing no questions, I appreciate the good job you did giving us a tour through DEED.
Thank you very much.
And with that, I want to mention that our next meeting on Thursday is in room 10 because we're going to be TV stars. So please adjust your presence to that place across the street now. Then any other thing to bring forth to the committee? Seeing none, we are adjourned.